We'll move to the third case, Ames versus Home Depot, and again give counsel just a minute to clear out and move in, respectively. Ms. Paulson.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Laura Paulson on behalf of Plaintiff Appellant Diana Ames. This case should be remanded for trial because Judge Kaur deprived Diane of her day in court by ignoring several key facts in this case. The first is that Diane repeatedly requested leaves prior to any violation of any Home Depot rules. Second is that Diane took all of the steps that she could in order to seek those leaves under either the FMLA or an accommodation under the ADA. Third is that there is a key dispute in the testimony about the extent of the information in the conversations that she had with the store manager when she was requesting those leaves on December 8th, December 12th, and December 20th. Fourth, there's another key factual dispute over whether and when Diane had an intake at the Mercy Provena Hospital scheduled and why she did or didn't decide to go on the 21st when it was marked on her calendar. And fifth, there's another key factual dispute over all of the circumstances leading up to the store manager's decision to send Diane for a drug test on December 23rd and the circumstances relating to the results from that drug test. And because of all of those material disputes of fact, this case was really appropriate for a trier of fact and should not have been given summary judgment to the defendant. The district court incorrectly found, when it failed to give all reasonable inferences to Diane, that she did not have a serious health condition as required by the FMLA and that she did not have a disability as required by the ADA. However, the record shows that a reasonable jury could have found both of those things were true. With respect to the first, a serious health condition for the FMLA is or could be a mental condition, which is what we assert alcoholism is, a mental condition that has continuing treatment by a healthcare provider. The record in this case shows that what Diane actually received was an overnight hospital stay in what they call a detoxification program. So she's admitted to the hospital. The doctors administer some kind of procedure to make sure all of the alcohol gets out of her system, and they spend 24 hours or so evaluating her condition. When she had been speaking to her numerous counselors before entering into that detox program, they explained to her that it could be a number of days she'd have to be in the hospital, could be a number of weeks. They would not know until she was admitted into the program because it seems to depend on the level of toxicity in her body at the time. So she's admitted into an overnight hospital stay. She's discharged the next day. We know because we have the discharge report. She's admitted on January 1st, 2007. The discharge report date says January 2nd, 2007. And then what happens after that is a series of therapy sessions, AA meetings, group sessions, essentially daily treatment with a healthcare provider over a period of about 5 weeks. That kind of treatment does qualify as continuing treatment by a healthcare provider under the FMLA. There's two different regulations pursuant to the FMLA that tell us that this kind of treatment is covered. One states that examinations to determine if a serious health condition exists and evaluations of those conditions can constitute continuing treatment by a healthcare provider. I think that's applicable here. The second says inpatient care of any duration or subsequent treatment in connection with that inpatient care can constitute continuing treatment by a healthcare provider. Again, these facts on this record, when given all reasonable inferences in Diane's favor, shows that she satisfied that test. So that finding by the district court was just incorrect on this record. Then with respect to the ADA issue, so the ADA's definition of disability is obviously a bit different from what we're talking about under the FMLA, but this is a scenario where both statutes provided coverage to this individual. What the ADA looks for is a disability that substantially limits major life activity. Now, this court has previously held repeatedly that alcoholism can be a disability. So I don't think there's any question about that. The question here is whether Diane's particular manifestation of alcoholism was severe enough that it limited a major life activity. And so the information that we have in the record with respect to Diane's particular alcoholism was that it caused her anxiety, depression, insomnia, that she took several prescription anti-addiction medications, none of which were successful, that she went to regular AA meetings and individual therapy sessions all over a course of 4 months, and during that period of time, her symptoms continued to get worse. So that was the course of treatment that she was seeking, and that was the way it was impairing her life before she went and did this detox and inpatient program.
But she maintained that it did not affect her performance at work, correct?
That's correct. She did testify, and it is correct that her work performance was not impaired. However, her work performance, she does not have to be impaired in the major life activity of work in order to qualify as disabled under the ADA. And this court's decision has made that clear. What we've alleged that she is disabled in are other key tasks like sleeping, concentrating. And in particular, and the reason why she sought the accommodation in the first place from Home Depot is because in order to seek the treatment that she really needed, because as I described, this four-month course of treatment was unsuccessful. So her disease was continuing to get worse. And the counselor she was seeing said, you managing this on your own is not sufficient. You need to go into an intensive program, and in order to do that, you're going to need some time off work. Now, what we have in the record is a letter from that the employee assistance program counselor, who's referred to repeatedly as a CARE counselor. C-A-R-E is the abbreviation for the name of Home Depot's program. The CARE counselor, Clark Burton, sent her a letter on December 6th. On December 6th, that letter says, as we discussed or following up on the phone calls that I left for you, you have to enroll in, he names the name of a facility that has an intensive outpatient program or a similar type facility, no later than December 15th. So we know that there's this letter on December 6th. So 2 days later, December 8th, she goes to her store manager. Diane, by the way, is a department head at the store. So the only person more senior than her boss that she reports to, is the store manager, Jose Pena. At this particular store, at the time these events occurred in December of 06, there was no HR manager on site. There had previously been an HR manager that, as the record shows, is the normal practice at Home Depot stores. They have an HR manager on site at the store. They have a district-level HR person and kind of a corporate level above that. But at this particular time, this HR manager at this store had just been transferred to a new store. So there's no HR manager at this particular store. So the single person that Diane could go to say, my healthcare provider just told me I need to enter into this program. I don't know what my options are. She does not have any education beyond high school. She had never had any experience previously with either the FMLA or the ADA, other than some brief summaries in the employee handbook, which is a voluminous document that probably not all of employees read cover to cover and memorize. She had no familiarity with what her rights were, but she understood that the procedure was, I should go to my supervisor and ask him what my options are. So she goes to him on December 8th, again, 2 days after she gets that letter. But I think for all intents and purposes, really as soon as she could. So as soon as she becomes aware that she needs this leave, she goes to her supervisor. They meet on December 8th. She says to him, as she testified at her deposition, I don't know what my options are. Now, Home Depot would like you to understand that to say she wasn't requesting a leave. But she tells him, I need more treatment for my alcoholism. She discloses to the store manager the history of her disease. This store manager had fairly recently come to the store. I believe he started in November of 2006. So he hadn't been there for very long. He hadn't worked with her for very long. And so she discloses all this information that he would need to understand.
But she had been treated through the ways you've mentioned up to that point without interference with her work.
Correct.
The need to be at meetings had been accommodated at whatever schedule she was on and so forth. So how is he to know this is something else?
Correct. That's a good question. And to just elaborate on what you were explaining, she had previously disclosed her alcoholism to Home Depot. It was a different source manager who was in place at the time, and that is when she enrolled in the Employee Assistance Treatment Program, which is how she was assigned to this care counselor in the first place. When she goes in to speak with Pena on December 8th, she is telling him, I need to know what my options are because I need something more. Now, again, she didn't know to say, I need to know how I take an FMLA leave, or I need to know what accommodations you can give me under ADA. And the case law says she's not required to. There's no magic words she has to use. There's nothing in particular she has to say to invoke those rights. So she has this conversation on December 8th. It seems, although there's some dispute in the testimony about what exactly is discussed, the parties do agree that Pena says to her, bring in a doctor's note. He doesn't give her anything more specific. We know that Home Depot at that time, and still today, has an extensive packet of information that they call the leave of absence packet. This information is only available on Home Depot's intranet website, and it's only accessible to people who are store managers or above. So a store manager.
And didn't Pena at part of that meeting say, well, I'm going to consult with the former HR person who's at this other store?
Correct. Gretchen, who was the former HR manager, who was, as I said, at a new store, was still in occasional phone contact with Pena.
Isn't the record clear that he did that?
I don't think the record is clear, no. Gretchen testified that she did not recall having discussed that with Jose Pena. So yeah, I believe it's his testimony that he did, but she did not confirm that. And Diane doesn't have one way to know one way or the other.
All right.
But what we do know that happened is on the 8th, he asked for a doctor's note. The next meeting she has, it's on the 8th, then we have a doctor's note in the record that's dated December 11th. So within 3 days. And then on the 12th, she testified and Pena admitted that she brought in this note. Now, the doctor's note is very simple. It just states, you know, I'm Dr. So-and-so, and Diane's under my care. She was referred to me by and lists a couple other health care providers. Now, it doesn't give any additional detail, and the reason for that is because all Diane knew was, I need a note from my doctor, and that's all that Pena told her. If Pena had given her Home Depot's established leave of absence packet, none of this would have happened. That's what he should have done. That's what he should have been trained to do. That's what Home Depot's procedure was. And if there had been an HR manager on site, and if he had consulted with them, potentially that's what they would have instructed him to do. But that's not what happened. So she didn't have a form for a doctor to fill out. She didn't know what information had been requested. And so when she provides this doctor's letter, dated December 11th, she gives it to Pena in a meeting on December 12th. She thinks she's met her obligations. In fact, Diane testified that Pena's response to the letter was, thank you, that's fine. Now, if Pena had seen the letter and said, that's not at all enough information. I need more details. I need to know what day you need to be gone. I need to know how serious your condition is. Then she would have had an opportunity to go and do that. But that's not what happened. He did not meet that up. I'm sorry?
What did the letter say?
You'll give me just a moment. I do have a copy of it right here.
Well, you can summarize it. What didn't it say, I guess, is...
It is essentially just a one... paragraph letter. It says, it's dated December 11th. It says, to whom it may concern, Diane L. Ames has been under my care. She has been referred to me by Carol Russell, a licensed clinical social worker, for counseling, and she is seeing Dr. John Zhang for psychiatric medication management. Sincerely, Douglas Dorman, MD, and it gives his address and then has further contact.
That's the doctor's note. It doesn't say she's got this disability or she needs to have a work time off. It doesn't say why he's sending the letter other than just here I am. Sort of.
Correct. And I think, as I said again, when we give all reasonable inferences to Diane here, her testimony explains she didn't know what was supposed to be in the doctor's letter. And I think more interestingly, you know, the regulations and the case law make clear that the risk of ignorance here is on the employer. It's not on the employee. That the employee was not told what to put in the doctor's note should not be a waiver or forfeiture of her rights under the FMLA. And further, the regulations make clear that when a doctor's note is insufficient or when a medical certification is deemed insufficient by the employer has an obligation to both notify the employee of that fact and, importantly, to give them a reasonable opportunity in order to cure whatever the deficiencies are. Neither of those things happened here. There is nothing in the record to suggest that anyone at Home Depot, Pena, an HR manager who later saw the file, or anyone after that point said, that's not sufficient information. If you want to leave, we need more details. So Diane proceeds as though she has satisfied everything that she can do. She gave the doctor's note. Her boss said, it's fine. And then she doesn't hear anything. She's expecting to get more information. She's expecting there's going to be presumably permission granted so that she can take the leave. That doesn't happen. We know that on her calendar.
Rebuttal time.
I do. I would like to finish because I think the timing here is what's key.
Okay.
So we know that on her calendar on December 21st, she had an appointment scheduled at that hospital where she later had the detox. We also know she didn't go to that appointment on the 21st. The last conversation that she has with her supervisor is on the 20th, the day before. This conversation is key, and it is hotly in dispute. The store manager testifies that it was a brief interaction. It was just he and Diane, and not much was said. Diane testifies, and a witness corroborates that it was a sit-down, closed-door meeting in his office to which she brought a fellow employee as a witness. Now, the reason she brought a witness because she knew her requests were going unanswered. She knew she was in a desperate situation. She has a disease that she's battling every day, and she has an appointment at the hospital the next day, and she knows from this particular store manager, if you miss any work, you will be fired. She doesn't want to lose her job. She still at this point doesn't know what her options are, but she doesn't want to lose her job. And so she goes in on the 20th. She tells him all this information. Again, he still refuses to give her the leave of absence packet, still refuses to tell her you have rights under the FMLA or the ADA. And what we know that happens is that she doesn't go to the appointment on the 21st, and then on the 23rd she comes into work and is sent for a blood alcohol test, and that supposedly is the reason for her termination. So I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
And how much time is that? Okay.
We'll make it 2 minutes.
May it please the Court, Paul Bateman on behalf of Home Depot. Your Honors, I think that there's something very fundamentally missing here with respect to the argument that was just made by counsel and that has been ignored throughout the course of the proceedings. Judge Kaur issued a very lengthy memorandum opinion and order in which he gave plaintiff every reasonable inference in dealing with the motion for summary judgment. He accepted her testimony. He accepted the statement of facts that were uncontested under the local Rule 56 statement of fact, and he accepted the position that they took in their brief opposing the motion for summary judgment. And that position that they have taken and that is supported by her own testimony is fatal to her FMLA claim and her ADA claim. And the reason why it is fatal is because of this. By plaintiff's own admission, with respect to any disability, she was not substantially limited in any life activity. She specifically testified. She specifically admitted, and she specifically argued in response to the motion for summary judgment, that her work performance was unaffected by anything due with her alcoholism, as she has defined it.
Yeah, but what about the anxiety, the sleeplessness, those things that Ms. Balson talked about?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to address that because that is something that has been belatedly brought to the table. But let's address it head on. Could anxiety be a medical or physical condition that might substantially limit a major life activity? The answer is yes, it's possible. Similarly with depression. However, and this is what is critical here, there is nothing here in this record that demonstrates that if she had any kind of depression, that it was substantially limiting any major life activity. Just simply saying that you have a physical or mental condition does not get you to home base with respect to an ADA claim. So she can say that, but as Judge Kaur specifically found, there is nothing in this record from a medical nature that would show, and she's certainly just saying, I had anxiety, I had elements of sleeplessness, does not indicate that you are substantially limited in a major life activity.
Well, there are lots of lists of major life activities. Is this one confined to her ability to work?
In terms of the specific question that was asked and answered, That is clearly on the record. Plaintiff had ample opportunity to put something in the record that showed that, yes, I've admitted that in terms of the major life activity of work, I'm not limited, but I'm limited otherwise. She did not. And certainly the doctor's note that she has provided does not in any way indicate that she suffers a disability or has a serious medical condition.
Did your motion under the ADA put that issue specifically at issue?
Yes, it did, Your Honor. It was specifically moved that she was not disabled under the ADA, yes. And Judge Kaur specifically addressed that issue. She specifically had the opportunity to address that issue, and what she has addressed so far falls far short of what extant law at the time required for her to succeed with the ADA claim.
Under the FMLA, then, it seems to be a communication issue here about whether or not she knew what she could do and whether they properly told her and who was limited there. And focus on that a minute.
Yes, Your Honor. And I do want to come back to one other thing with regard to the FMLA, but I will address the notice issue here.
I'm sorry, I thought you were done with the ADA. If you did want to finish it, but I do want to hear about that one.
So with regard to, I will just finish with the ADA. She has not proven that she is disabled. If she's not disabled, there is no duty to accommodate. She cannot make out a prima facie case of discrimination under the ADA with respect to her termination. And that's basically shortcuts the entire rest of my argument. The rest of the issues are addressed in the brief. Let me get to the issue with regard to the FMLA. There was a discussion between her and Mr. Pena on December 8th. The context of that discussion had to do with whether or not her need to go to AA meetings. When she returned to work on December 10th, and this is something that is very critical here, in terms of responding to Mr. Pena, and that's what his understanding was, she brought back a doctor's note, which he did ask for, and that is the December 11th letter, which says that Ms. Ames has been under my care. She has been referred to me by someone else. It doesn't indicate that she has a disability. It doesn't indicate what she's been referred to, the subject of the reference. It certainly doesn't say that she needs time off for anything. It doesn't say that she has to undergo a specific kind of treatment. And notably, this doctor, who she apparently has seen, this is the only thing in the record that refers to him. They did not bring forth this doctor to try to amplify during the course of discovery in response to the motion for summary judgment that there was, in fact, a need for a leave. But in addition to bringing that doctor's note, she also brought back the schedule of the AA meetings. And as is pretty darn clear from the record, and as counsel has conceded, at no time did Home Depot ever interfere with her ability to go to these meetings. Now, fast forward to December 20th, because that is another conversation that takes place. Again, Ms. Ames was asked questions about what she was seeking at the time of this meeting. And in response to questions from counsel, she indicated that she was not seeking an immediate leave. So she was not seeking to take a leave on December 21st. She was not seeking to take a leave on December 22nd. And in fact, she was never in any kind of inpatient proceeding until January 1, which was an unplanned incident, which happened to occur while she was driving around with a friend. So does this note indicate that she has a need to take a leave? The answer is no. Did she ever indicate that she had a specific need to take leave on a particular date? And the answer is no.
Is it fair to read the evidence as saying that she knew that she told Pena she would need some leave on a schedule that she did not yet know?
I think that what the evidence is saying and what Judge Kaur took out of her testimony is she is indicating, I don't have a need for an immediate leave, and I do need to do something, But the nature of what she needs to do and the timing of when she needs to do it, that is not clear.
Let me restate the question. Is it fair to read that language, though, as saying, I know I'm going to need some time off?
I think it's fair to read that language as saying, I'm going to need some time off, but I don't know when and right. I don't know how.
And could you address this issue about the respective responsibilities of employer and employee in knowing about the FMLA and how specific requests need to be?
In particular, Your Honor, there is no need, obviously, to say I need an FMLA leave. But there is some obligation on the part of the employee to give some kind of background information with respect to what kind of leave is needed, what the leave is needed for, so that the employer can then
Pena knew that she had alcoholism and was undergoing treatment and needed time off for that, right?
Well, what Pena knew is that she needed to go to AA meetings. That, I believe, is what the testimony indicates. In terms of Pena knowing that she needed...
And did she communicate effectively to him, reading the evidence favorable to her, that she needed more?
Judge Kaur found that she did give sufficient notice, and that is his finding, Your Honor. We disagree with that. But again, if you go back to step one here, with regard to whether she was entitled to an FMLA leave. Again, that serious condition, let's assume that alcoholism is a serious condition, would have to render her unable to perform part of her job. And again, on that basis, based on her admissions, based on the Rule 56 statements, and based on what she has said in her response to the motion for summary judgment, she does not have a serious condition.
I'm troubled by that reasoning, okay? And I'm troubled by it because it seems to suggest that somebody who's not incapacitated at work but who has a serious illness that needs attention can't take time off from work to get it, and that seems to be inconsistent with the whole FMLA.
Your Honor, if I might just address that. Someone could have something that is a serious condition that requires that they take time away from work, but if it does not render the individual unable to perform the functions of the job.
But if the employee can't be at work because they need to get treatment, they're entitled to leave under the FMLA, right?
If they're unable to go to work in order to get the treatment.
Right.
For example, to
attend Alcoholics Anonymous meetings or a detox inpatient, right?
Absolutely. And
that's sufficient to establish a serious medical condition.
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, not necessarily so. Under this set of circumstances, when the individual is able to go to the meetings and is not necessarily rendering them unable to do their job, I don't believe that that is what the regulations provide. Because that is a literal term of the regulation, unable to perform the functions of the job.
But if the schedules conflict...
There's absolutely no evidence here in terms of schedule conflicts that those were never let unaccommodated, Your Honor.
When she gave a list of the AA meeting times, that was the one thing she gave, I guess, along with the doctor's name?
Along with the doctor's name, yes, Your Honor.
Did they list times that were sort of agreeable that she would be able to go to those? Or
yes, Your Honor. There is absolutely no evidence that Home Depot, that Mr. Pena said, I see this. He said, this is fine.
Would be okay?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And that had, in fact, been the case in the past. There is not one iota of evidence on this record showing any time that she wanted to go anywhere that she was not allowed to do so.
Any request for time for something else or implication of time for something else? Didn't just say I need time off to do something, detox or something? AA meetings mean you go there and agree with others you're not going to drink and whatever else goes on.
Correct, Your Honor. And in terms of taking the time off to do the evaluation according to the EAP, there was no pushback on that either.
Could you explain how this concept, I think the way the evidence referred to it is full time means fully flexible. We know Home Depot is open a lot of hours. She's the head of a department. She's obviously a key person at the store.
Yes.
And Pena presumably relies on her and has to rely on her to be available when he needs her to be there.
Yes.
There's some tension there, obviously, between his expectations, the company's requirements, and the FMLA's protections.
Your Honor, and Home Depot works with its employees around that. I'll give you an example. One of the things that department heads are required to do is to close the store, and I believe that she was required to do a closing on a particular night of the week, say Wednesday night. Well, what Home Depot did was they flipped it in terms of having her close and instead had her open. So, yes, Home Depot is pretty much a 24/7 operation, but they do work with their employees to allow them some flexibility with respect to that particular setup.
You mean she was scheduled to open instead of close in order to go to an AA meeting at closing time?
Yes, if you need to do that, yes, Your Honor. I have nothing further unless you have any further questions.
See none. Thank you, Mr. Bateman.
Thank you.
Ann, you're 2 minutes, that generous extra 30 seconds. Ms. Balsam.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just to address counsel's last point first, what is in the record is a dispute over what kind of accommodation they made about her schedule. The particular AA meetings Diane testified in her deposition she preferred to attend was Wednesday night, and that was the night that they do something called ad set, which evidently is about setting up for the new advertisement that's coming out. Diane said that she had to change which AA meeting she went to because Pena required her to be there for that. So I think that particular point is in dispute and is one of the many reasons this should have been decided by a trier of fact. But just to get to a few other points, one is that both the district courts and Home Depot's reasoning is mistaken in their analysis of the FMLA because it's premised on a belief that FMLA protection doesn't begin until the date treatment begins, which essentially would leave this big chasm between when an employee like Diane makes her request and does all the steps she can in order to evoke her rights under the FMLA, and then when she actually starts that treatment, leaving her unprotected from any retaliation that happens as a result of that request.
Well, would retaliation mean that sometime between the, I'm going to take up your time here, but sometime between the time that she's going to be able to arrange for it versus the time that she actually shows up, that she comes to work drunk, is that retaliation?
No, but to hold that an employer can simply withhold information and delay in its obligations to get this information to her in hopes that a person who's admitted they are an alcoholic who is suffering from worsening symptoms of their disease and needs treatment in order to get help, that they can withhold information and delay things so that she will eventually mess up and come in with alcohol in her system, I think is not what these statutes intended. And just to make kind of a concluding point, there are significant policy issues involved in this case. One is, as I recited in the factual kind of summary earlier, there wasn't anything further Diane could have done to protect her rights. She did all the steps she could do. And so the question is, if this summary judgment is affirmed, what can future employees do that are in her situation? She didn't just leave work. She didn't fail to notify her employer. She took all of the steps that the statutes require, and still she suffered as a result. And then further, why would an employer like Home Depot continue to train its managers or to create documents like the leave of absence packet if, under these facts, there are no repercussions to them whatsoever, that they don't have to follow any of those policies or procedures, and they're let off scot-free because the employee, while they were delaying, happened to fall into this trap that the store manager had set for her. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we'll take this case under